CliffCentral.com.
Progressive, cultured, and brave.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
The Threaded Exchange with CRB Ealing. Live on Cliff Central.
Guys, welcome to the Threaded Exchange. Brave, cultured, progressive. As you know, we always have incredible guests on our show. And today I've got someone really special who's making waves in music. Someone I've known for a while since he was at UCT Music. His name is Nathi Mavuso. Oh, is
Lange,
your name? Is it Lange or Nathi? What name do you go by?
I'm telling people my real name.
Okay, so what is your name?
It's Lange Mavuso.
Okay, his real but fake name is Lange Mavuso.
It's my real name because it's my dad's surname and my mom's surname.
Which are your...
Langa's my dad's surname, Mavuso's my mom's surname.
Oh.
Yeah. But also, Langa's nice because it means like the sun and day. But I like the sun because it's the brightest star in our orbit.
That's dope.
Yeah.
I should be crying right now. But wait, did you do it because the whole changing of name thing was a thing of like, fuck, I'm going to be a superstar and I should have a name?
No, actually, it was because of Nathi Mankai. I think that's his surname. Nomvula guy.
Oh, Unati. His name is Nathi. Yes.
So I was just like, oh man, because I was at school when Nomvula came out, and I just kept on getting calls like, oh my god, I heard your song, and I was like, what?
People
are
really calling you about that.
Yeah, and they're like, oh my god, it's on radio. It's so amazing.
So didn't that be like a huge compliment because they think it's you? Because it means that you can sing probably at that level or even better.
I mean,
it's like, imagine people calling you being like, oh my word, I just heard a song like Drake. Imagine you said the same name as Drake and people thought you were Drake. Like, I would see that's a good thing.
No, I think he's a great, he's a great musician and I love his voice.
But
he
it's much of
a lot of like Ringo, and Ringo's one of my favorite musicians in the country. But
not your vibe.
Not that it's not my vibe. I think there'll come a time when I'd like to explore that kind of musical genre, but I think right now I'm still
what do you call that musical genre, like Oringo and Nathi? Like, they always sing about lovers they never find for like 20 years. Like, Ringo has been singing about
how many kids.
Yeah, he's been singing about like Kuyabanda. It's like it's been cold for the last 15 years.
No man, like
but his bank account is warm, I guess.
It has to be he's done well for himself.
So who are you? Who are you? Let's tell the Threaded Exchange listeners, who are you first and foremost?
Okay, I am Lange Mavuso. I'm a singer-songwriter. And I've got music out and I'll be sharing my soul with people for a very long time, hopefully.
So you are what they call a musician, not an artist?
Both.
What is the difference between an artist and a musician? And between Rihanna and Beyonce, who's an artist, who's a musician?
The difference between a musician and an artist for me is that a musician has the knowledge of sort of how it works theoretically.
So they know how to transpose,
they can
write,
transpose, they can write,
beats,
they can articulate
produce.
Themselves, all of that. You don't have to make beats and produce, but you kind of know your way around the musical like space. So you don't need to tell someone like, oh, I wanted to go da-da-da-da-do. You can say like, this song is in this key and we're trying to move like
that
this.
That note is too sharp. Yes, let's make it a bit flat.
Exactly. So that know. I think that's a musician. I think the artist is just someone who is a creator, you know? Someone who can something out of nothing.
So between Rihanna and Beyonce, who's a musician, who's an artist?
You're trying to get me into trouble.
No, I'm asking because I'm trying to draw a parallel for people. I mean, I think there's nothing wrong with someone just being an artist.
I think that's not the best comparison.
Okay, what is Rihanna in your opinion?
I think Rihanna is an influential artist.
Okay.
An influential commercial artist.
Because I think
artist.
That's how I would describe it.
Yeah.
I used to do music in high school. So for me, a musician would be someone who... you know, can write the song, but can also have an idea of how they want the song to sound.
Yeah.
So if they're given a beat, they'd be like, I need trumpets there. I need this in B minor.
Yeah.
I need this note
and
to
Beyonce
hit here.
Beyonce can definitely do that.
Yes.
She's got that knowledge. She's put in the time. And I think it's very important for artists to give themselves the time to hone the craft and to go to school and to try and understand this thing that they're trying to do and not just run into it for the recognition and the attention and being on the radio and all of that stuff. But I think people need to, if you really love something, be the master of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I would not call myself a fashion person or stylist person because, I mean, like, if someone wanted to start a conversation with me and be like, yo, let's talk about Phoebe Philo and what she's done at, like, Celine, and I'm not going to know that history. Like,
but I also feel like generally as like these new school cats,
yeah,
I like to call us because we are, we're the millennials. I also feel like there's a sense of like, let's be fake deep. Let's be alternative for the sake of being alternative.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm making sense what I'm saying. Like, for example, like I love everything. Yeah. I can love a Drake. I can love a Solange. I can love a James Blake. I love everything from what is considered mainstream to what is considered commercial.
Yeah.
But then you get those people who are like, oh, I hate commercial. I'm like listening to things that people don't listen to. And like, it's seen as this like weird space.
Where it's
like, yeah, this fake special place. And then,
no,
and then if you listen to Drake, it's like, yeah, that's not real music. Like real music happens underground.
No, please.
In a dingy space. But you get what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
Am I making sense?
Yeah. I just think those are people who just want to be special. I've sat with people who are like deep jazz heads. And I was like, yo, let's listen to Rihanna Anti because that album is so great.
Yeah.
And everyone will be like, yeah, it's such a good album.
I also feel like with music for me personally, it's that I like listening to a lot of commercial music.
Yeah.
Because I've done music. I mean, I used to do like very orchestral music.
Yeah, but you come from Cape Town.
Yeah,
that's like
so for me,
the
I like
musical hub of the country.
Exactly. So and I even did actually, this is crazy. In my grade 11 and 12 year, I actually did jazz with Mike Campbell.
I know. I know this because I went to UCT with people who went to school with you.
Yeah, and I played the trumpet and I was
people.
Vocal and like Amy Campbell. We used to sing together. Yeah, so it's crazy.
I know all of these things.
I was actually
about
meant to be in music more than fashion. So this is actually my favorite
I think
show.
You auditioned to go to UCT Music School, did you not?
I did, same time as fashion school, yes. And then I chose
and
fashion school.
And then you chose Lysoff.
I chose fashion school and then UCT wanted to push me more to become a trumpeter rather than a vocalist.
Really?
Mike was like, you should be a trumpeter, not
you
a
you play trumpet?
Very well.
I need to book you for a session.
Very, very well. And I can play the drums. And I'm also good with rhythm. Rhythm section. Very good with rhythm. Drums.
But
there's
you
no
see,
drums.
That was my thing. Like, I went to an art school here in Joburg. And I feel like if the National School of the Arts was in Cape Town, like, NSA people are already beasts. Like,
yeah.
A lot of the people in the industry who've gone to NSA just kill it.
Yeah.
Because they've given their craft time and they've learned things about it and they've made sure that they've like attacked their shortcomings and strengthened what they're already good at, you know?
Yeah.
And Cape Town has like the most fertile ground for a musician.
Yeah.
Like,
but I feel like if I was a musician, I'd be very depressed. That's why I never pursued
why?
It. Because for me, music is like, for me, I really, really enjoy music. I really, really do. And for me, music is such a deep, deep connection.
Yeah.
Because of things that have happened in my life. And the only thing that I could ever feel resonated how I feel is music. And so it holds such a strong, strong sentiment to the point where I don't want to be conscious of people when it comes to music. Like, As an artist, I feel...
It's a lonely...
Yeah. I'd rather have music for myself. And now that's what I do. Like, smoke a joint, chill at home, and just listen to music. Like, that's my vibe.
Yeah.
And now, if I had to be an artist, like, this, like... you want to be able to create, like, now there's a record label, or there's me, and I have to distribute this music, and now people's opinions, and now I have to create a hit, and all this, like...
You don't have to do any of those things.
It takes a brave soul to go into music. I think you're brave. Like, I really admire musicians, because I'm just like, you're taking something, such a personal experience, and you're putting it out there for people to consume.
Yeah.
I could never do that. I'm not emotionally stable to do that. Like, I'm happy. I do that through fashion, but fashion, it's still a thing of, like, it's still fun, and it's not. Like, music is the one thing. If I had to describe my greatest love, like, music is that one greatest love.
Yeah.
And I just... My relationship with music is not strong enough for me to just go out there and be like, this is my life. Like,
I think you should try to come back at some point.
I want to be a DJ, actually. I want to be a DJ.
Everyone in the city's a
DJ. No. I don't want to be a DJ so I can play at gigs.
Yeah?
I want to be a DJ just to play for myself. I literally enjoy music for me.
Maybe you should DJ just like with friends.
And I also just want to help musicians package music better. Like, I listen to music and I'm like, fuck, that's too sharp. Oh my God, you missed a note.
Yeah.
Oh my word, like, this actually sounds, I know what you're trying to do. I wish it was, like, I could wish I could just sit in listening sessions and be like, you need drums there.
Yeah.
You need a percussionist there. You need a tiny, like, I'm good at that. I'm good at, like, helping because I have such a good ear for sound.
Yeah.
So that's what I want to do, hopefully.
I think that's cool, but I would never want someone to come and tell me how to make my music.
You see, but that's the thing, though. Like, that only happens if I'm part of, like, your team. Like, Rick Rubin does that.
Yeah.
Where Jay-Z will call them in and be like, Rick,
but you see, that's when, I think even with a Rick Rubin, Rick can come in and tell Kanye, like, you need to remove all the drums.
I want to be able to do that.
But if you know that the drums are going to be the signature for your sound, keep your drums.
Yeah.
Even if you're talking to a Rick Rubin.
Yeah, you know?
And I think it's important. I think it's very important to collaborate with people and to have people who are sounding boards, which I don't think happens a lot in this country. I think a lot of people just like put stuff out. They don't think about stuff like carefully when they do share content about their music. And I think we are at a place as like young musicians where we can start the trend of being more attentive with how we share our music. You don't just put up a song, put up a behind the scenes video, get a photographer to come in, get visuals. You know, like, it's a whole product. And I think this is my thing with this thing of like, oh, I only listen to music that's like deep. Sometimes like sometimes it's not that deep.
Yeah.
It's just like not well marketed.
Yeah.
And like Rihanna's big because she's got a massive marketing like team behind her and like finances that are put into putting her everywhere so that even if you don't want to listen to Rihanna, you're going to listen to Rihanna because the labels, first of all, they have the infrastructure and resources to put her on all radio. They have the connections to put her in spaces that even if you're not trying to consume her, she's so much around you, at some point you're going to consume something, whether you like it or not.
Yeah. No, so, I agree with that. I also think this is something I actually want to dive in, is that like I also believe like the reason why I probably haven't delved into music as much as I would like to is because I don't have a musical soulmate.
Yeah.
What I've realized, I look at people like Ella Fitzgerald, I look at Miles Davis, like all these greatest musicians up till Beyonce, Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Even people like you, it turns out that even Black Coffee, for example.
Yeah.
It turns out that like we only see the artist, but that artist always has that one person that helps him create.
Yeah.
You know, definitely. Drake has Noah Shabib. Yeah. He can't make an album without Noah.
Yeah.
So it, how much of that is important to you to have that one person that helps you craft your sound? Because that's how I feel like. I don't have that.
Yeah.
So essentially, I can't explore the different types of things I could do. But with you, when I listen to your music, it sounds like, and also through the years, because you've always done music, and just listening to you recently, that sparked this interview was like, okay, I know where this is going. Yeah, I can hear where you're going. And it sounds like you have a musical soulmate.
Yeah. I think I definitely do have a musical soulmate. I have a couple.
That's cool.
One of them died, and that was what the first EP was about. And it was kind of like sort of letting go of them and their spirit and just letting them rest in peace.
Yeah.
And now I've got a couple of people in my corner who I am constantly bouncing off ideas to, sharing things with and writing with, constantly trying to create with. So
yeah,
I do have musical soulmates, and I think it is important to have those people around you because they help you to sort of weave the story together. Because at the end of the day, you're just sharing something that might have happened to you or a yearning that you have. And sometimes you do need people to help you piece it together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What in your musical journey, you know, is, I mean, I only met you during your UCT years.
Mm-hmm.
Was music the obvious choice always growing up? Was it a thing? Because I know, like, for me, it was a thing of like, oh, yeah, that's great. You have a great voice.
Yeah.
And it's like, you should be a singer. Like, were you that kid that was just like belting out music?
Yes.
And was it easy for you to be like, mom, dad, I'm going to do music?
Yeah, it was. My parents used to sing in the choir. That's how they met. And I used to spend a lot of my weekends and holidays at their place, and they would go to choir rehearsals constantly, and they'd be doing choral competitions. So I think the bug, like, crept in then, but I wasn't like, oh, I want to be a musician. And then, and as kids, like, I grew up in a, like, townhouse complex, and we were playing, like, oh, we're going to be pop stars this week, because it was a TV show, and we'd sing the songs from pop stars. And one day, this girl that was older than us, she was like, oh my God, come and hang out with me, because I think she was bored. So we go to her house, and she's playing music, and she's making us sing for her all the songs that she heard us singing by the pool. And then she stops me, and she says, sing this song again. She plays Whitney Houston, the song about I Believe the Children Are the Future. She plays that song, and then she says, sing it back to me, but this time, sing it from your stomach and not your throat. And when I sang it, I could hit every single note that Whitney was hitting, and I was like, damn.
Yeah,
I can sing, you know, but because my voice was so high pitched, I was so embarrassed by it. Like, I never told anyone.
Yeah.
So I'd come home from school and sing to myself at home. And then eventually one kid heard me singing in the school bathroom, and she ran and told the whole class, and she was like, Nati can sing, Nati can sing. And the teacher made me sing. She was like, you have to sing in front of the class. And I was like, no, I don't really know how to sing. And then I sang, and the whole class went crazy. And then they literally made the whole grade leave the class so that I could sing for them. And then slowly but surely, I sang at like my grade 7 thing. And while I was in primary school, I watched the movie Fame, like from the 80s. And I was like, oh my God, I want to go to a school like that. And then I discovered that the National School of the Arts existed. And I was like, that's Fame. So I went to NSA.
So you went to NSA?
Yeah.
And then you sort of moved back to Cape Town to do UCT.
Yes. So I went to NSA and I did drama for 3 years. And then I did music for my last 2 years of high school. Then when I left, by the end of matric, because this person that I was so attached to died in my matric year, I wanted nothing to do with music anymore. I was just like, I want to leave the school. I'm already part of the model the Model United Nations debates, like RCL, I just want to go academic. So I go to Rhodes and I go study politics and economics. And now I'm missing one credit. And I bump into this girl that I went to high school with. And she says to me, oh my God, you're here. What are you studying? And I'm doing, and I'm like, oh, I'm doing a PPE. And she's like, why? And I'm like, because I want to become a diplomat. And she's like, okay, have you signed up for all your subjects? And I'm like, yeah, but I just need one more elective. I don't know if I should take like sociology or history. And she's like, no, there's this like one credit. You can continue with your academics, but you just take it. It's called instrumental music studies, and you can do music. You can do a musical instrument there, and you can continue with your academics. And I'm like, oh, cool. So then I start doing classical voice. And I think within 3 weeks of being at Rhodes, I applied to UCT, and I was like, I can't be at Rhodes anymore. I need to go to UCT and do this music thing, because like, it's really the only thing that I really and truly love, and I would do it even if no one paid me to do it, you know? My mom was very reluctant. She was like, just finish your degree. You can go do music later.
Yeah.
You did it at NSA. Like, surely that was enough. And I'm like, no, I really feel like I need to go and do it. And she says, well, you need to finish the year at Rhodes. You need to get a certain like level of marks for us to say, yes, you can leave. And once you've achieved all of that, then you can go to UCT. So I had to go through the whole year at Rhodes, finish. My mom's, like, she told me, if you don't get 3 A's, you can't leave Rhodes. You're going to finish that degree. So I had to get 3 A's, and then I could leave. And my acceptance letter from UCT.
So did you get your 3 A's?
I did. I got my 3 A's, and I left. The next year, I went to UCT, and I started doing jazz performance under the direction of Amanda Tiffin.
That's dope.
Yeah.
Amanda Tiffin, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And also, most people don't know that, like, Judith Sapuma went to UCT. I remember that's one of my things. I remember being like,
one of the,
yeah, and also Sakila Mulesha went there, who worked with Goldfish. That's who I met. And also he was a vocalist as well as a trumpet player, which was great. So those are kind of the people that I was in those scenes. Crazy.
So that's how I got to UCT and studying music.
And then the move to Joburg, how did that happen? So
I'm in my third year now at UCT. Hella depressed. And I'm not
Why do you depress? I don't know if you're comfortable talking about this, but I remember, like, I met you, and then I remember when I met you, I knew you in music, but I just, like, I'm very sensitive to energies and stuff, and I'm just genuinely not very open to new people very quickly because it's like, I need to see what you stand for, who you, what are you about, who are you as a person. I remember I couldn't tell that about you, but I knew you loved music.
Yeah.
And then you just disappeared. And then I could see, and I remember you used to come to Joburg, go back to Cape Town, come to Joburg. Then you disappeared for a while. And then 3 months in, I think I bumped into you and like, I live here now. Yeah. And your hair was different. Your whole vibe was different. And now you're like, I'm creating. I'm a musician. I'm doing this thing. What happened?
So
what
happened? I lived in my third year. So towards, in the beginning of my third year of varsity, I started to like, I've always been depressed, right? It's just a part of who I am.
Yeah.
And I've been like seeing people since I was in high school.
Yeah.
And I stopped seeing a psychologist at the end of high school when I got to Rhodes, and I was like, no, I'm fine now, I'm cool.
I think I see a therapist every single day of my existence.
So by the time that year began, I was just starting to crumble. I think like I'd ignored stuff so much and like compartmentalized it to a part of my brain that it was like, it's too much now. Like I was starting, I had a breakdown. That's actually what made me, that just pushed me over the edge.
What would you describe as a breakdown? According to you, what made you feel like, okay, I'm having a breakdown?
So while I was at Rhodes, I knew this girl who had anxiety. And I was like, girl, this is some white disease. Like you're just nervous, get over it type of thing, you know? Not understanding what she was going through, because she was genuinely like, oh my God, this is a real thing in my life. And the teachers understood it as well. And I was like, I just don't understand. Like, she just needs to calm down. Then one day in that third year, I'm at dinner with friends, and it was like, our friends are Jewish, and it was like some Jewish holiday, and they made us this Jewish dinner, and they were educating.
You're eating challah.
I think so.
Yeah.
We were having this dinner, and I look at my phone, and it was a date that triggered an emotion about something that had happened in the past. And throughout that year, there was just like a series of events that was really traumatic for me. And my biggest problem is like loss and rejection, right? Because I didn't grow up with my father, I think there's a sense of some sort of rejection.
Yeah.
Because
I suffer from the exact same thing, by the way. Like,
and
I know what that feels
and
like.
I've never been able to deal with loss. Yeah. Like, a lot of my friends will think I'm the worst at grieving because, like, it literally turns my whole world upside down, you know? So I'm at that dinner and I see this date and I'm like, ooh, I'm starting to feel like really funny. I don't want to cry in front of people. This is not the vibe. This is going to ruin everything. So I'm like, I'm just going to the bathroom. I'm going to go pee quickly.
And then you
get into
the bathroom.
As I'm about to cry, I'm thinking the tears are coming. I start losing breath, right? So like now I'm just like breathing really terribly and it feels like I'm about to faint. So I call one of my friends and I'm like, please get me water. I don't know what's going on. She comes in and she's like, dude, you're having like an anxiety attack. And I'm like, whoa, 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 what the hell is that? And she's like, what's happening to you right now? And I'm like crying and I'm losing breath. And because I was losing so much breath, my body started shaking to try and oxygenate itself. And I was like, you need to call my aunt because I'm about to die. I can feel it. And that's how it felt for me. I felt like I was physically about to die. Yeah. She calls my aunt. My aunt comes quickly. She takes me to the hospital. The doctor says to me, is there any history of cardiac arrest in your family? And I'm like, I don't think so. And he's like, your heart is racing as fast as someone who's about to have a heart attack. What's going on? Are you stressed? And I'm like, no, I just had a trigger from a date. And they were like, cool, we're going to give you some anxiety meds. You need to go see a psychologist and a psychiatrist. Went to go see a psychologist, went to go see a psychiatrist. Then they told me, cool, you're depressed, blah, blah, blah. You need to come see us regularly. Here's some medication, blah, 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 blah. Started to take that, started to go for the regular sessions. But as the year went by, I started to feel like a zombie. I started to feel like I was not physically present in anything that was happening. I was just letting the days go by with like each passing moment. I just wasn't present. And the only time I felt better was when I was at home. So as I go back to UCT for that last year, my mom says to me before I leave, are you sure you want to go back to school? And I'm like, yeah, I'll be fine. But I'm not doing this like medication thing anymore. I'm going to like stop. I'm going to stop taking it slowly so that I just don't need it anymore. I'll find other ways to feel better.
Yeah.
Exercise, those kinds of things, you know? And she's like, oh, okay, cool. Just stick to that routine that you're going to create because maybe that will help.
Yeah.
Go back to UCT 2-3 weeks before school's open. And I'm there. And my mom calls me on one of the days and she's just checking up, like, how's everything? How's registration? I'm like, I'm cool. And she's like, I can hear that thing in your voice again. What's going on? And I'm like, no, I'm fine. She's like, if you don't feel like you are up to being there, come home. I would rather you come home now than to come back in a body bag to come and bury you.
Because, so that's what triggered the move to your mother's.
Yeah, my mom was like, if you feel like you need to come home, come home. So I applied for a leave of absence. I got a letter from Amanda. I got a letter from my psychologist and psychiatrist. UCT gave me the leave of absence. And I came back. I was only given 12 months.
And you're full on leave of absence.
And this is like 1 year, 6 months later. Yeah. I'm definitely not on leave of absence anymore. But my credits, I think they last for 5 years, hopefully. I should go back at some point.
Yeah. Or they'll give you an honorary when you're famous.
I'd like to put in the work. So,
but honorary is given to people who've put in the work in a career for many years.
You've put in the work practically. But I would also like to get to the point where I can help create workshops and programs to educate kids in like township areas who have the talent but don't have the access to music schools. So I'd like for me to get to the point where I can build these programs with the teachers and myself because I have the knowledge to impart to kids. And at this point in time, I don't think I know enough to be able to teach kids so that they can get to the tertiary level and continue on in the tertiary level and then pursue it if they want to. So I'd like to go back and finish so that I have like the backing to do that.
And how are you dealing with the depression now? I mean, no, I suffer exactly from the same thing. Didn't grow up with my dad, but for me it was an identity issue.
Yeah.
And that is what crazy people don't know.
Yeah.
Is that because I was raised by my I was raised by my mother and I went to a super masculine school.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm because of that, I became a super masculine man.
Yeah.
You know, I love things a certain way. But because I was also raised by my mom, there's a huge feminine influence.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I found myself not identifying with either. I was like, well, I don't identify with being super masculine.
Yeah.
But I have an element of that, but I'm also an element of having feminine, you know, vibes, which
and you're
I enjoy.
In this world that you have to choose.
And so the mixture of that made me who I am. And so I was I loved music, but at the same time I played rugby and I was a competitive sportsman. I mean, I was angry all the time on the field, but I could be very fragile on stage singing, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I didn't have a deep voice, but I had a very big physical build. And the whole time everyone's like, oh, you gay? Is Sia straight? Is Sia gay? Is Sia that? Is Sia this? Is Sia that? Sia's a hoe. He sleeps with all these girls. Sia's this.
Yeah.
And I felt like, and that's what triggered what became my depression, because I actually suffered from depression from an early age. But for me, it was just a thing of, this is sad. My dad's beating my mom. It's okay. Things get better. Let's move through it. Let me work through it.
Yeah.
Didn't really make friends. Like, I don't want to connect with people. I just want to get through high school, get shit done.
Yeah.
And so after school, you have to interact with people. You have to make friends and all those crazy stuff. And then I was forced to, and that started giving me anxiety. Fashion school as well, same thing. It was like, oh, this guy's straight, but is he gay? Is he not? Is he in the closet?
Yeah.
So most of the time I felt like everyone was just trying to define who I should be. And that really then turned me into a depression. That's how Thread Man became my escape. I was like, you can be a guy wearing a suit but have pink hair. You know what I'm saying? You don't have to fit this specific stereotype. And it's just crazy that you're talking about your depression and what triggered it. And I just realized it's similar. But for me, it was more of can the world stop telling me what to be? Can
the world
just let me be? And I believe that human beings are spiritual beings that are on earth having human experiences. And I think for me, what I've found empowering about depression is that it's the depression happens when a spiritual being is sucked too much into a human experience.
Yeah.
And your soul feels trapped and your soul is trying to find its way back to its true essence.
Yeah.
So in a sense, you're depressed because of a human experience.
Yeah. I think the way that I deal with depression now is that I try to face everything that I feel. And before, I didn't. And my biggest outlet right now is like writing and making music and performing and also just talking about stuff. Yeah. You know, if I'm having a terrible day, I'll call someone and we'll have a conversation about it. And I think the biggest thing for me in my experience was that I felt like I had to be like the happiest person there, the most grateful about everything, because like you're talented, you're doing well in school, like you should just be happy that you're alive and ignore like any problem that exists in your life, you know, because someone's living like that sort of like mentality of that, like someone's worse off than you are.
Stop being
like,
ungrateful about stop being ungrateful. Snap out of it.
Yeah,
look at your life. Go out there and slay.
You know?
Yeah.
And now it's just a thing of like, I try to face every single emotion that I have. And if I need to give myself time or an activity to do to let it out, I'll do that.
Yeah.
I don't hide from myself anymore.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think for me personally, my biggest things that depression affected me with was because I'm in this industry that I'm in and experiencing fame on social media and everywhere. And it's like I have a life that I have, and then there's a whole career entertainment lifestyle that I have, right?
Yeah,
because of the career that I've built.
Yeah.
And between juggling these two lifestyles was intense.
Yeah.
Whereas I have my group of friends who know me, who I'm close with. And then all of a sudden, people that I don't know are talking shit about me on social media, saying, see as this, see as that.
Yeah.
And then the whole thing, his voice, he should be this, he should be that, is see again. And then hearing also people that chill with you talking shit about you.
Yeah,
and it just, I remember it just literally made me feel unworthy. And it just made me feel like, why would people want to talk shit about me when they don't know me?
You know?
I'm trying to create a platform here for all people to be able to speak. So,
and what
for
do
me,
you
it's
think
something
made you like pass that? Because I think we exist in a world where people are going to talk about you every day.
I think what made me go past that, I was about to say, is silence.
Yeah.
I think for me, how I cope with everything is not only just living my dream through my company, but I'm always alone, actually.
Yeah.
I love my own space. I love to be able to think, and I meditate, I pray, and I read a lot of books.
Yeah.
People think, actually, I'm this party animal, but actually, I'm more in tune with myself than people realize.
Yeah.
I'm actually very much a homebody. I read, I pray, I travel. And if I'm not out there for work, I'm not out there, period. And if I'm not out there to celebrate my friends, then I'm not out there, period. So that's why, like, people can't figure me out, really.
Yeah.
And even now, like, no one knows anything about my private life.
I generally don't think you ever owe anyone an explanation about who you are.
Exactly.
Regardless of, like, whether they're talking about you or not. Because I think that when people are talking about you and you begin to entertain it, you give it life.
Yeah.
To continue on.
That's the thing.
On,
hate
you
sucks
know?
You in.
Yeah. So if you know something is not true, you can let it go, and it's going to be hard in the beginning because it's constantly being brought at you, and it's like scratching for your attention, and trying to ignore that in the beginning is extremely frustrating. But I think when you get to the point where you just realize, like, I know myself, the people that love me know me, the people that I care about know who I am, they know what I'm about, and they know the things that I've experienced. Therefore, whatever third party has to say about me can't affect me to the point that I'm going to be bothered about it the entire day or for the rest of my life.
No, definitely.
Because people are always going to
and
talk
I think that's
about
where I got
you.
To. I think for me, it started with knowing thyself. Learning to appreciate myself, learning to say, you actually deserve this. You work for it. God chose you for this. You're killing this shit.
Yeah.
and I choose not to engage with negativity. And I'm all about positivity. And I think even more so for me, it highlighted the problem with social media.
Yeah.
Where people actually live on social media. And I was like, actually, I want to live a life that is true and authentic, and I want to connect with people. So I spend my time mostly just focusing on real life relationships and online relationships. And for me, being online is just about work and just commentating wherever I feel I have something to say. But genuinely, I'm not on there anymore. Yeah. And like now, when someone says something about me, I'm just like, I'm out here living
a great
life. But
you see, because you know that people are living on social media, you know that what they consume of yours, they think they know you because that's their world. That's their reality in their mind. So whatever information that they come across that has to do with you, because they interact with you and engage with you in this internet realm, they almost feel like they own a part of you.
Yeah.
So they feel entitled to your story because they feel like they're a part of it. And that's why they're going to have an opinion about it. But what I think what a lot of people need to realize that are in like, that do put stuff out is that there's a certain perception that you create on social media, and it's either people are going to hear things that confirm that perception about you, or they're going to hear things that denounce that perception about you, and it's going to get people talking regardless.
Yeah.
So because you've opened yourself up to the space, you're almost like you're going to deal with it regardless of whether you're like very famous or not famous. Because like if there's a kid in your school that doesn't really talk to you a lot but has you on social media, they feel like they can have an opinion about you because they feel like they know stuff about you now because they have this kind of access to you.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of knowing, like, don't forget that a lot of this stuff is an illusion. Don't lose sight of what's real.
Yeah.
And once you are not caught by the illusion, you can always recognize like the real experiences and the opinions that hold weight.
Yeah.
And those are the ones that matter.
But even then, I always say, even the opinions you think do matter, even those, they still come from a human being.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, human beings don't know shit. Like, if you think about it, like, everyone's just on this earth just trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
Do you get what I'm saying? Because if you think about it, we live in a world where now, whatever qualification you might have, it doesn't guarantee you to be in that specific lane of life.
Uh-huh.
So there's nothing on earth you can actually do besides being your true self that shows you the way. So even then, another human being, like as you were saying before, like another human being, even no matter how big, even a Kanye West can't come to you as Ulanga to be like, yeah, take the drums off. Like,
yeah,
because
you know,
to you that sounds incredibly amazing, and to you it makes sense, and to you it's what you connect to, this who you are, and he can't come and say.
But you see what
you get what I'm
you
saying?
See what makes a difference is that I think, and this is my biggest problem with Twitter, I think people don't know that you have to earn your opinion. You can't just speak on everything because you have a thought about it, you know? And I think,
because then it's an ill-informed opinion. You can't be like,
So my thing is like, because of this entitlement of like, of having an opinion on everything, I'm worried about taking in information from people that I don't know. And I don't know where they're coming from. But I do think that people can earn their opinion with you, but still be wrong.
Yeah.
So you can trust someone and have them say things that you don't like, but you also have a choice as a person to say, actually, that's a load of crap.
Yeah.
Because
have people told you, I mean, now you're doing incredibly well and you're on the rise or whatever. Have you had musicians who have told you, or people in the industry your music, not the one? Has anyone had said no to you?
No one has said it to my face if they do have that opinion. I mean, a lot of the reception for me right now is still, and I was telling like someone very close to me today, I was like, I'm still waiting for that the negative comments to come. Because even when I go through the Facebook comments from like the Toyota Live with the Soil, the bulk of those comments are about me and like how much people love how I sing and how I share music yeah. and how they love my music. My SoundCloud page is that. My Twitter responses are about that.
Yeah.
When
I hope
when
you never experience
video,
hate. I hope you don't. It's not a nice thing to experience.
I don't think it's a nice thing, but I also like I like it when people, if you're going to come and criticize me, have constructive criticism to say to me. And also don't be afraid of me criticizing you as well.
Yeah.
So if you're going to tell me, I'm not enjoying the guitar on this and this and this of your song, blah, 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 blah.
Can you play the guitar?
You can. You no, I don't care if you can play it or not.
Yeah.
If I have an opinion about you as well that I've decided to be tight-lipped about, and now you've opened up this kind of realm of conversation between us, then you should also be able to take it.
Yeah.
If that gets difficult.
I mean, if you're a musician with millions of followers, you can't, you know, go engage with Wendy who has 10, 20 followers who's saying Langa Mavuso looks like Isibindi or whatever.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like
it
gets to a point where you can't single-handedly engage with every single person saying something negative. You get to a point where you're just like, actually, this doesn't matter. Fuck them. I'm going to continue life.
I think the thing that helps me is that, like, I don't care to be liked by everyone, and I don't expect everyone to like the music.
Yeah.
I don't like everything that is put out, so I don't expect every single person to be about it, you know. But I know, as long as I know that I've put in all the work that I've needed to put in and an extra amount, and I believe in it, and the story is honest and is shared in the most truthful way, then I'm happy.
Yeah.
And even if
what
it touches
inspires
five
your
people,
music, like think about like being so young, like people always ask me what inspires me, and they think I'm gonna be like, yeah, Alexander Wang or like Tom Ford, and I talk about like my life. I'm 23 years old, my sex life, my dating
that's
life,
exactly that's
alcohol, late nights, fights that happen, the wildest
exactly.
shit that takes place. Yeah. Where I wake up in a hotel in Japan, I'm like, fuck, what did I do last night? Like, what life is this? So for me, that's what inspires me into my styling and my aesthetic. So I want to know, like, what inspires you, and, you know, how deep do you delve into you experience? Because I also think it's important to you as your craft to experience life to its greatest extent. So how do you experience life without being lost in
it? It's my favorite thing. A lot of my music is inspired by the people around me and the experiences that I have. So the people that I've dated, the places that I go to, the parties that I go to. And I think someone was telling me last week, like, you're always out. You're always, like, at a party of some sort. And I always just say, babe, I need to get some content for the music.
Yeah.
You know, like, you need to live life to share the stories, because essentially that's all I'm doing. I am trying to take every single thing that happens and create a narrative and put it in and try from that narrative create a sonic painting for people to visualize through sound.
Yeah.
You know? So it's people and experiences. That's
are you not afraid? I always think about musicians, like, let's say I'm hypothetical, you're in a relationship and there's a whole three-way thing that's happening.
Yeah.
Like, are you one of those brave people who would just like write about it and
sing
about it?
Yeah, of course.
Like, wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Not in a bad way. Please don't mind me. Not saying that's crazy. It's like I think of myself like I communicate through fashion, but fashion, there's no singing or hearing. So people can't know who inspired what.
But
you know,
see, the thing
but music
me,
is quite raw and it's quite in its delivery.
I never tell the whole story. I always leave space for the listener to
paint their own picture.
Yes, because I think the thing is with art is that people love it because they relate to it. When someone watches a movie, they start to identify themselves within a character or within a storyline. And that's what I do with my music. I try to not make it too personal, but also it's still my story. It's
still not too vague.
Yeah,
either.
It's not too vague, but yeah.
Straight to the point.
Yeah.
So, shit, we're running out of time.
So you'll never know.
We're running out of time. So, quickly. Ooh. Oh, you just made one of our marks an instrument.
Come on.
But I want to ask two things before we run out. First thing I want to ask, your career, you just collaborated with Black Coffee recently. Mm-hmm. We saw the recording sessions. What's next? What is happening? What are you cooking? Don't give people too many details because my attack at Mapandle.
Hey!
But give us a cloud.
I only talk about things that are finished.
Give us a blanket of, okay, sort of like a brief summary of what's next for you.
Okay. So I collaborated with Black Coffee. I've signed to his record label.
So you're signed to Solistic?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Congrats. So, do people know that you're signed to Solistic?
No, this is the first time we're talking about it.
Oh, wow.
Signed to Solistic now. I just also did a song with Tweezy. What else? Oh, there's a single coming out. What else?
So the Black Coffee single, when is that dropping?
I think it's on his album because, I can't say it because it's major.
Okay, let me talk about this. What is it like working with Black Coffee? What is it like?
You know what? I walked into it thinking, oh God, I'm going to be working with like this megastar. Is he going to arrive late? Is it going to be a thing of like me sitting in a corner
and just
do this and do that? But he literally, it felt like working with any other person that I've worked with. He came in, we spoke about life, we just chilled, we had some Red Bulls, chatting to one of the guys that was helping us.
Sponsorship. Guys, this is how you become an influencer. Mention. Do you hear that mention? We were chilling and drinking some Red Bulls. And Red Bull works with Solistic, they work with Black Coffee.
That
was a good product job. Now they work with you.
Check out the EP on Red Bull SoundCloud, bitch.
I'm just saying, that's how you become influential. That's influence right there. I mean, you can talk about something within your lifestyle, but let's carry on.
Yeah, so we had a conversation. He played a chord, added some drums to it. Mahlatsi and I started creating a melody line, and I started writing the song, and then we ended the session because he had to go for a meeting. No, he had to go for the Axe event. Cool, he goes for the Axe event. I had to leave that weekend and go to KZN to the rurals for a funeral. Go home. And now, ngisemakhaya, like, there is nothing to do. But luckily, I brought my laptop. So I was bored, and I took out my laptop, and I was like, let me finish writing the song. Sit down. It's dark. And then I finished writing the song. Flew back in. As soon as I landed, I went to the studio, and I was like, I finished the song. And they're like, cool. And then I sang it to them, and he was like, let's lay it down. And I laid down the vocals. He sent it back to me. So how he works is like, there'll be a basic beat that he makes. You'll write to it and record to it. And then when he leaves, he's going to continue working on it. So then a day later, he sends me the song. And then, and then he tells me he wants to add someone on the song. So we'll see who he adds.
Oh, wow. That's where we're going to leave it. Yeah. We will see who we add.
Yeah.
Langa, thank you so much
for
joining. This was a great show. This is what
it's
about.
This was fun.
We just have a conversation, man, and we'll see. We'll hear what the people say. But congratulations.
Thank you.
And keep fighting the good fight. And this is the 3rd Exchange. And you've inspired many young musicians who I'm sure want to follow in your footsteps.
Thank you. They need to keep pushing. And don't be lazy. Put in the work.
Don't be lazy. Put in the work. Siya Beile. 3rd Exchange. I am out.
Progressive, cultured, and brave.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
The 3rd Exchange with Siya Beile. Live on Cliff Central.
CliffCentral.com.